This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Yo, third hour here on Tiki and Tierney. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney coming to you here on this Tuesday. Pretty busy World Series tonight, game one. A lot of conversation about that as Mr. Kershaw will once again try to thwart those October demons. Anyway, Tig and I come to you from Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Great chat with John Smoltz. If you want to get your hands on that, just go to radio.com or Apple iTunes podcast, wherever we are, youtube.com/Tiki and Tierney. Great spot with the Hall of Famer. Had that last hour. Charles Davis, great hire, great addition, great guy. Been a friend of the show for years. Even when he was with Fox, he would hop on with me and Teak all the time. So he is in that second seat with the Birdman and, of course, Evan Washburn right behind the great Jim Nance and Tony Romo and Tracy Wolfson. So he'll join us today. So the first 2 hours was radio only. Hopefully you enjoyed the soccer, if that's what you're just coming in from. Or if you didn't watch the soccer and you just came to watch us, welcome. Good to have you back on the tube. All right. I personally think it's more interesting as we get into this Bills-Chiefs game from last night. We started with Dallas. We're not going to really get back into that now. Spent a lot of time on that. Spent time on Tua as well. The Dolphins making that decision. Maybe we can reset that before we get out of here.
Yeah.
I think, T, if you disagree, take it a different direction. I personally think the more interesting angle from last night is this sudden new direction the Bills are taking rather than how well the Chiefs ran the ball. That's interesting because that's different.
Yeah.
But I think it's the Bills. But if you want to go with Kansas City, take me there, wherever you want.
Yeah, no, look, with Kansas City, and I think it's interesting, but it's a brief conversation. They ran the ball 46 times, BT, which is not something that they never do. Not just this Kansas City Chiefs iteration of Andy Reid's offenses. It goes back to when he was in Philadelphia. Just not what he does. But doing a lot of college games, BT, I can see and notice the simplicity of defenses, and it's literally one of two things. You're either playing cover one or you're playing it's a shell with cover two, so you're playing zone and the safeties are way deep, and it's easy because they do so many run pass options. You're always seeing runs, right? It's why you see so many runs in college, because you get these big shells. They don't want to give up these big plays. And so the safeties play deep, and they want to be the deepest team on the field, which in turn causes the offense to turn around, hand the ball off to a running back. And the same thing applies in the NFL. It's just the coverages are much more complex, except when you play the Kansas City Chiefs, because they are such a big play threat, like everyone, whether it's Watkins or Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, they're big play opportunities almost every play if you don't play a shell. So teams are just, the Bills said, look, we got to play a shell. And as a result, the Kansas City Chiefs just turned around and handed it off until they stopped it, which they never did.
Yeah.
It's simple. It's not complicated why they did that.
No, I'm with you. And listen, before we got off the air yesterday, we were joking around. I'm like, hey, you probably want to lay those 5.5. I loved Kansas City. And the reason I love them, I mean, aside from that, the point spread, but the reason why I really love Kansas City, the Bills suddenly have this huge hole in the, maybe I shouldn't say suddenly, but they have this huge hole in the middle of their defense, their linebackers, the entire core has been withered away and compromised here. And, I'll say their name. Maybe the Jets just weren't able to expose it early. Maybe the Dolphins, who didn't look great the first couple of games, and they played them in week two. So they started Jets, Miami. They played some weaker teams. And I think that is partially attributable to this sudden hole in the middle of their defense. It's now being exposed by quality teams. But also, you're starting to see some regression from Josh Allen. And to me, that's the big takeaway. Like, I think that this is probably a pretty fair assertion. What matters now is what happens after the statement. But for me right now, I think it's fair to say that Josh Allen is not, he's not as good as the player that, we were touting the first four four games, MVP. And I don't mean like on the periphery. You know, we're talking like, you know, number one or number two. He's right. He was right there. He's not there anymore after two average to below games. But he was, in reality, he's not quite that player yet. And he's not the shaky, inaccurate. Well, he could be inaccurate because that's been an issue. But he's better than what he's played the last two games. So what's paramount for the Bills is that that gets corrected very quickly. They're able to mask up that middle portion of the defense and hang on for dear life. But I will say, and I take no pleasure saying this because I picked the Bills to win the division, mm-hmm. and I think that they probably still hang on and get it done, but I have now modified my expectations for the Bills. What I thought they might be able to accomplish this year, I don't quite feel the same way.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's hard to point to what's causing this. So he had a decent day, you know, for most of this season. Decent days, I mean, completion percentage versus touchdowns versus, you know, interceptions. The Tennessee game where he threw two interceptions, that was a bad one.
Oh, one was a tip. That first one was a tip, to be fair. But yeah, I got you.
I'm just talking about statistically, just like his impact on the game. And then when you look last night, it was the first game in a long time where he put his feet to work. Right, the first game of the season, remember this, against the team that you don't talk about, that I do, the New York Jets. He had 14 carries, right? And he just was dominant. He scored a rushing touchdown. It was almost like, how can you defend against him if he's going to throw the ball this well and he has this ability to run, as we've seen over the entirety of his career, right? And then all of a sudden, that started to pull back. It pulled back specifically against Tennessee. And then last night, while he had eight rushes, it was almost by necessity. It wasn't like it was part of the game plan. It wasn't, you know, we're gonna use Josh Allen's skill set as a runner to set up other things. And it was more, uh-oh, something's broken down.
See, I actually thought that it was part of the game plan to keep Kansas City off the field.
Yeah.
Like, those felt like design runs to me the first few.
Some of them, yeah, the first few did. But then once it got away from them and, you know, they I don't know if they panicked. It was almost like he was put into a position where, because they shouldn't have panicked. The game wasn't that far out of hand.
No.
It felt like they got put in a position where Josh Allen is now having to be Mr. Comeback King. And he hasn't done that, you know what I mean? So not as just a pure passer, and it put him in a position where they just look bad. Now let's be real. And Kansas City had a bad game a couple weeks ago, but they have a really good defense. And when they get after you,
you like it more than I do.
I do. Well, they
like it more than I do. I love it.
I'll give you this, BT. They're inconsistent, mm-hmm. but when they're on, they're really good. And they had a sound and a tight game plan. And the Bills couldn't figure it out. Now, maybe that had a lot to do with the weather, you know, with the rain and the, you know, you couldn't air it out as easily, and the field is slippery, and you just worry, you know, about, you know, making mistakes in weather like that. But I looked at that game and said, this Kansas City Chiefs defense is playing their butts off, and Josh Allen didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, I just... You know, and what is that line of delineation between, you know, playing great defensively or playing pretty good defensively mm-hmm. against an offense that's not going to slice you up? You know, I don't know. Singletary's nothing special. We know that. That's why I really thought they should have made a – well, I guess they did, but Le'Veon Bell chose Kansas City, who obviously couldn't play last night. He'll play next game. They need something on offense. And, you know, that was Diggs with the sick catch, right?
Yeah.
Which was a great throw,
on
by the side, way.
Yeah, like on the corner of the end zone.
I don't know how we squeezed it in there. No. I don't know how we caught it. I don't know how he, you know, dotted the I's with his toes. But I feel like the Bills are morphing. I felt like there was an element of dynamic play the first month of the season that was fun to watch, encouraging.
Big plays.
Now I feel like they're morphing back into to pedestrian offense that they've kind of been for the last 20 years. I'm not saying that they can't self-correct and still have pockets where they hang 35 on you, and Josh is going to connect some big balls downfield because he's got a great arm,
mm-hmm.
and he's got some players. Brown could play. Diggs could obviously play. I know that. But, again, I just need to throttle back, dial down the enthusiasm for this team. And if they force me to ratchet it back up, I happily will.
Yeah.
I love watching the Bills play. I really do.
Well, they
right now, I'm dialing it back a little bit.
Yeah, look, they've they lost to two really good teams. The Tennessee Titans, as we know, they're undefeated. They're really good. So there's no shame in getting blown out. But it was surprising that they got blown out as bad as they did. That was 42-16
Ugly.
Yeah. I mean, but it was surprising. But we know that Tennessee is good. So they're just
but we think that Buffalo's good. So eventually, if you're good, you got to beat a good team.
Yeah, but it's so early in the season. Like the first quarter of the season. I mean, they played the Jets in Miami.
20th.
I know, but we're only six games in. There's 10 to go, right? There's 10 more games to go.
Hey, I can't wait for those over for my team's
Yeah,
point,
right?
You know, just get over.
But think about it. There's 10 more games to go. And so they played well in some of these games. But when they played the elite, they're not the elite yet,
no.
Right? The Buffalo Bills. And I think we probably wanted to elevate them there because we know, or at least we think we know, they're going to win the division. And so when you win in divisions and you can beat the Pats, you can beat obviously the Jets and Miami. You feel like, man, you're in the elite class, but you can be a division winner, maybe win 8, 9, or 10 games and still not be anywhere close to elite.
Correct.
And so I think that's the disconnect from what we thought and what we're now finding out.
But it's not only what we thought, it's also what we were exposed to the first month of the season. Like,
true.
It felt like they, all right, so they make the playoffs last year, they come back this year, Josh Allen goes from this to this. Like,
yeah.
Whoa. You have to throw him in the MVP race, which we did happily. You know, we're touting him, we're saying, geez, I mean, we've never really, I mean, really, we talked about how we've never seen, you know, such palpable growth, like in an area of obvious deficiency, which was throwing the ball with great accuracy.
That's right.
Something he struggled with at Wyoming. Something he was like 52% his rookie year.
Yeah.
Wasn't a ton better last year, especially when it mattered. You know, he went from a very raw but interesting project to seemingly overnight this refined, you know, game wrecker.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
Here's the thing. His career average completion percentage is 58.7%. That's including this year's 61%. So that's including. It's still 58.1%.
Yeah.
You know, the first couple of years, it was, you know,
52%.
It was mid-50s on average the first couple of years. And so this year, 71%, 68%, 72%, 70%, even 63% in that loss to the Tennessee Titans. But more importantly, he was impactful everywhere. Four touchdown passes, two. He's known for two at least every game.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know that his game has evolved. It's just a matter of doing it every outing as opposed to, okay, sometimes you're going to have an off day and you got to find ways to win anyways. When he has his off day like he did last evening, he hasn't figured out how to still find a way to win.
That's fair. I want to throw this in there about Mahomes. Well, by the way, Charles Davis, as I said before, coming up next, our colleague here at CBS. So I was watching and I'm saying, man, he seems pretty. And I didn't know this about Mahomes. Not that I thought that he wouldn't do this, but it was really cool and eye-opening for me to see it. It's so apparent that he's just all about the wins.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't care at all about a stat.
That's where I'm going.
Yep.
And you never know. Like, when you have, you know, a young player who just burst on the scene, like whether it's a big-time scorer in the NBA, wants his shots, you know, like, you know, whomever it might be. Name a star player that puts up 25 to 30 points a game that gets to jack up 20-plus shots. And now all of a sudden, you know, let's say if there's a modification there and 20 becomes 12, Is there still the same energy and earnestness throw their credit? Maybe, like with Steph Curry, probably. With some others like James Harden, I'm not so sure, right? So with Allen Iverson, if AI's taking 12 shots back in the day, and that's throttled back from 23, I don't know if AI is fully embracing that. Maybe I'm wrong, and no disrespect, I love his game, but I don't know if he was built to be able to process that. It's obvious that this young man is, and that's a LeBron quality. That's a Magic Johnson quality. That's a quality that that's a Tom Brady quality.
Yeah.
I don't even know if Peyton Manning would have been thrilled handing the ball off that. I think Tom Brady's okay with it. I don't think Peyton would have been too thrilled about it.
No.
Special quality.
Yeah, it was. And again, now 10 of these rushing attempts were Pat Mahomes. They had 46 on the day, but 10 of them were for Pat's himself. But he only attempted 26 passes. But in those 26 passes, he completed 80% of them.
21 of them.
Yep. So, I mean, he's adjustable. And I think that's why he's so valuable to this team. And you know, certain quarterbacks, you just feel like, all right, they got to do it this way. Otherwise, it's no way. They're not going to be successful. He's multiple. And that's the difference between the last two MVPs. Lamar Jackson, if he's shut down as a runner, we've seen what it does to him. He gets inept at sometimes throwing the football.
Yep.
Whereas Pat Mahomes, sometimes he can be a runner. Not that he wants to do it, you know, religiously and every evening, but he's got some acumen as a ball carrier, as an athlete. We saw it on that one, you know, almost third down completion.
The U-turn.
Yeah, where he was going to run out of bounds. He stopped and did a pivot and then came back in, set up fourth and short. And they went for it and obviously scored a touchdown. Darren Williams scored a touchdown on that. So he can do it all. And it's kind of awesome to watch him, even if he's not putting up these humongous numbers because people are taking it away from him.
Think about Aaron Rodgers and what he projected last year. Mm-hmm. Remember when they're, wow, LaFleur's a rookie. Wow, Packers are winning. Yep. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers isn't really doing that much. He didn't look thrilled during the process.
No.
He did not look thrilled handing the ball off and throwing for a 180 or 212, certainly pedestrian numbers for anybody, but so especially for one of the most talented quarterbacks of all time. It's something that, I mean, I always looked at him as a great teammate, but when you're that good throwing the football, you want to throw the football. The fact that he's, you know, fully on board and doesn't change what he projects, his outward demeanor, whether he's handing it to the guy behind him or he's throwing it 30 yards downfield to whomever, that is great. He is just awesome. And he does put you on skates more than you would think.
Yeah.
He does.
I know. He's sneaky like that.
He is. And I know we'll get with Charles Davis next here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't add, you know, that's the kind of game. I know every fan can say this, but you got to have 60,000 people in that building last night. That place, that those fans, that team, they deserve, you know what, who knows, maybe they get a stop on that one of those last third downs.
Yeah.
Maybe they get the ball back. Maybe they have a chance to tie the score. I don't know. But an empty, what's it, the stadium? I don't even know what it's called. It's not Bill Stadium. It used to be Bill Stadium. What is it called now? Whatever the name is now.
I think they took
New
the name
Era.
Off.
It used to be New Era.
I think they took the name off of it.
Is it just Bill Stadium?
I think
now?
It's just Bill Stadium.
I think you're right.
Yeah, because New Era pulled out of the deal.
Out of necessity because of the
you know, pandemic, the economy.
I don't know if they found a new sponsor, but no. I think you're right. I don't think that they did. Whatever it is, and I think you're right. I think it's Bill Stadium. That's a night game, some rain, you're 4-1 coming in, you got Mahomes defending champs. Boy, that's
those Bills maniacs. They would have been there regardless, freezing their ass off.
Oh yeah.
It would have been
absolutely
awesome.
And loud and drunk. All right, T. Coming up next here, Charles Davis. He is he's a star, and he is he's our buddy. Hey, listen. You know, Mr. McManus and company may have cut the big check to bring him over here. He was ours first. I don't want to say we discovered him, but we had a great rapport with Charles back in the day, and we'll keep that going now. He didn't forget about us. He's got the Steelers and the Titans, by the way. He got a big game coming up, and we'll talk about that and some of the other games he's done, some of the early trends, and how's it going first month or so at CBS. Charles Davis, that's next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. The music, and we got a good one. We got a bunch of good ones coming up this week. Fired up. Hey, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line on Tiki and Tierney is 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. All right, so Tiki, we've got a lot to talk about with our next guest too. Has, you know, blended in, fit in seamlessly, certainly distinguishes himself, not to infer that he just blends in. That's not what I'm saying at all. But he jumped into our company, and we welcomed him with open arms. He's great. We love him. We've known him for years. He's been a supporter of the show. We've supported him. And we're talking about Charles Davis, who is working this weekend. He's got big games. He's in a big seat with the Birdman in Washburn. Charles, welcome back to the – now. Nice to know that big CBS paycheck didn't change how you view the little people, man. I like that, Charles. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You're awfully kind, and it's great to talk with both of you again, and both of you were very gracious in welcoming me to the CBS Sports family, and I appreciate that very much, and I hope I made that clear, and it's just wonderful to talk with both of you again during this incredibly crazy time in our world. This feels like something we studied when we were kids in school.
Yeah.
But never thought that we would ever actually face. And
correct.
Here we are.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, no, it is. It is insane. And Charles, I wonder, because I've done a couple of college games, and one I was down in North Carolina against Syracuse to start the season.
Yeah.
There's no fans. It was so hard to get the feel of the game, right? And I wonder for you, because you've been in multiple places, including last weekend in Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia game. You know, what's it like? What's it been like for you to do your job with not a lot of the energy? Some places have fans, but not all of them do. Some of them have none at all. What's it been like for you to call games?
You know, it's a terrific question, and you having sat in that seat and experienced it, I think you understand. So I can't say exactly how you felt, but I think I have a pretty decent idea. Getting to the stadium, I remember the first game we did Baltimore-Cleveland in Baltimore, okay? And there were no fans there for that. That was when the ordinances were still in place. Remember, it was so strict that, remember, Navy opened at home against BYU?
Yeah.
And they wouldn't even do a waiver for the midshipmen
that's right.
to come to the game, okay? So that's how strict things were at that time. I remember going to the stadium, and I don't know how you felt, Tiki, but I felt like, is this the right day?
That's exactly right. You just right, walk like up. Literally. You park right next to the stadium, and you walk in, and there's nothing.
Remember when we were all in college, and you'd wake up, and you'd have that panic, like, did I miss that exam?
Yeah.
Am I late somewhere? Right? Remember those?
Yep.
That's what it almost felt like going into the stadium. And then once you got there and you started doing the game, you did the game. But the cues that you normally get as a broadcaster or even as a fan weren't necessarily there, because if you're a fan in the stands and you're knocking down your nachos and you hear a roar, your head snaps up and you locate what's going on. When you're a broadcaster, you might be looking at a note. There might be something that you know, cues you audibly. You didn't have that.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit different. Yeah, and you almost get to the point where you hear – bring your own energy, and it almost becomes a trite expression. But I don't know that there's a more emphatic expression of this NFL season.
That's right.
Then you'd better bring your own energy, or you and your team are going to get jumped on, because it may feel like a scrimmage when we were younger, because, you know, there's no fans there, but it counts. Yeah. The eye in the sky is still there. It's for real.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit, it throws you a little bit. But every time we've had games with even minimal numbers of fans, it felt different.
So the last game that you did, now you'll have the Steelers and the Titans coming up, which is going to be great. And we'll get to that in a moment. But you had the Ravens and the Eagles. And Eagle fans are beside themselves again. And I don't really blame them. There's a lot that's eroded with that roster. But I want specific impressions of, you know, just – and I know he's playing tough. In the last couple of weeks, he's played better. But in totality, what you've seen on film – Where is Carson Wentz at this point? And obviously they played the Ravens. Is the passing regression from Lamar Jackson, is that unnecessarily amplified, or do you think that that's accurate?
Well, let's start with Lamar Jackson, okay, Brandon, because what you're seeing with him is a guy who is seeking to get to the next level as a thrower and not just have everything come off of we're beating you to death in the run game. Every avenue is open for me to throw it, right? He and the Ravens in the offseason spent a lot of time saying, okay, we've got to get better at throwing the ball outside the numbers. We got to get better at the deep ball because we're going to have Hollywood back healthy this year. Remember, he played with a pin in his foot all of last year. And last but not least, can we throw the ball when we have to throw the ball as opposed to throwing the ball when we felt like throwing the ball, which was most of last season. So all those things coming into play. Watching them play over the last few weeks, guys, I get the sense that they felt like cruise control is not the right word, but they felt like they had things in pretty good order. So let's work on throwing the football as opposed to doing what we did last year. Let's try some of these things. Let's do some of these things. And Evan Washburn pointed it out to me last week. He said to me on a break, because remember, early in our game, I don't know if you saw it, he had one or two batted on a series.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Did you notice where the arm angles went from there?
That's right.
He started looking like a shortstop.
That's right. All sidearm. The touchdown actually was sidearm. We were scrambling to the right. You just kind of juked a little bit and then underhanded it, basically.
That was a sweet play.
Bingo. Beautiful play, right?
Yeah, beautiful.
Those are the plays you expect. But when you're standing in the pocket, you're not always wanting to go sidearm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he got to the point where they got batted back at, and that he started going more sidearm, and that's been one of the things about him where he gets in troubles when the elbow drops, et cetera. So that's what I see with that. I don't think it's something that can't be corrected, mm-hmm. but it's like a golf swing. Until you groove it under pressure, sometimes it regresses when the pressure's there. They're still working on that part with him. Okay, with Carson Wentz, I still think that he can be a very This sounds stupid. I still think that he's a quality quarterback who can be better than that. But I'm just going to tell you guys, it's going to sound like a ton of excuses, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm going to sound like the biggest Carson Wentz apologist. But I would just say, put any quarterback in this situation and say, okay, on Sunday, your starting left tackle was playing for the South Sydney Rabbitohs in rugby 3 years ago and didn't know what football was. Your left guard's undrafted out of Stanford. Your center's an all-pro. Your right guard we just picked up from Chicago off the practice squad. This is his fourth NFL team, I believe. Mm-hmm. And your right tackle is supposed to be Lane Johnson, who's now hurt, so I'm going to start the rookie out of Auburn.
Nice.
Okay, cool. All right. Now, my running back is Miles Sanders, but then he gets dinged in the third quarter, so I'm going to Boston Scott, who was a draft pick, cut by the team that drafted him originally. He's been with us. He's done some nice things, but let's face it, is he the one that you're putting on the scouting report that you're afraid of? No. And, oh, by the way, we did this during the game. I think we counted 12 or 13 receivers / tight ends that have played for Carson Wentz in the last two seasons.
Wow. It's a lot.
And now your go-to guy? It's Travis Fulgham, sixth-round pick by Detroit, cut. Cut again in training camp, cut by Green Bay. He's your go-to guy. All I'm saying is, I don't care who the quarterback is, good luck getting used to all of that. And everyone keeps screaming, well, when Alshon gets back, well, he hasn't been back since, what, midseason last year?
Yeah, that's right.
When Deshaun gets back, the last great game we saw him play was the opener of last season against Washington. Are we really going to expect a big jump when the two of them get back? He's actually played better with the no-name receivers than he has when they've been on.
So, Charles, bottom line is
this. It's going to be very weird.
The organization has failed Carson Wentz is what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
Well, I think the organization has tried to supplement it, but you also have to remember a lot of what we're talking about is because Jason Peters got old. They drafted Andre Dillard. He got hurt, you know. Yeah. Peters, they moved back to tackle. He got hurt. There's a ton of injuries.
Yeah, I mean, he's on IR, Jason Peters.
Brandon, the injury list is off the charts.
That's
they just lost Zach Ertz and Miles Sanders this week.
Yeah, no.
So when I look at the organization, I don't think that they failed. Could you make a case that maybe instead of drafting Jalen Hurts in the second, you go for some other help? Yes, you can make that case. Can you make the case that is Jalen Reagor the guy you wanted in the first? They like him. Okay, I get all that. Mm-hmm. But they tried to supplement and put things around. But if guys are dinged, the only guy who's made it through has been Kelsey.
Got you.
And that's it on the offensive line.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Charles, now I don't know how you finagled this because you were actually the one team this week. I know Nance and Romo are technically the one team. They have the 49ers England. But you have the game.
They're the one team.
You have the game, though. I'm talking about the game. I'm talking about the game. I'm talking about the game that you
–
I'm talking about the game that you have, Charles.
You
have Pittsburgh, Tennessee, two of the three undefeated teams left in the National Football League. Nance and Romo have San Francisco and New England, which will be interesting. But the game that you want to see this weekend is the one that you have. And Tennessee is getting it done old school with Derrick Henry. We talk about, hey, there's no big backs anymore. Running back is devalued. The hell he is. Derrick Henry is unbelievable. I mean, he's in the top three of my MVP right now just because of the impact that he has. And Pittsburgh, I mean, they might be the best team in football right now.
I'm loving what you just said about Derrick Henry because we keep talking about devaluing and this, that, and everything.
Yep.
I know a bunch of guys who, if it's iffy, if you make it back the week that you play Derrick Henry, a lot of guys are going to opt for another week. And that's not a knock.
That's a business decision.
Reality. Because you go and try and hit 250 like that, it could set you back another month.
Yeah.
That's who this guy is. And we're going to talk about it this week, and this is what I thought of, and I don't know what you guys think, but in that franchise history now, okay, CJ2K, I'm taking out of this argument because of body type.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Earl Campbell, Eddie George, and now this big monster's here.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about, okay? This is where it's getting historic in what he's doing. He needs more time, right? He needs more years. He needs to keep stacking these seasons together. But he stays on this kind of run. We're talking seriously historic proportions of the best backs we've seen play football. And he catches out of the backfield a little bit better than anyone would ever give him credit for. And then you flip it over to Pittsburgh. The loss of Devin Bush inside, getting ready for this game. We'll see if Robert Spillane holds up, what they try and do with that. But the beauty of what Pittsburgh has is Tyson Alualua has really come on at the nose.
Mm-hmm.
You add in Cam Hayward, you add in Stephon Tuitt, who's back full force. They've been keeping those linebackers clean and letting them run to the ball and make plays.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, man. I mean, and Tennessee lost Tyler Lewan, their offensive lineman.
Now it's Ty Sambrello, who's going to start, I believe, at left tackle. His first play or second play in the game after Lewan gets hurt, J.J. Watt beats him, strip sack, and helps Houston on their comeback. So that's not the same. Because remember Isaiah Wilson, their first-round pick, who was supposed to start at right tackle because of the big – he's been COVID twice,
mm-hmm.
you know, wasn't ready to go.
No.
I don't think that he steps in either. So I think Sambrello plays left tackle. Dennis Kelly plays right tackle. They'll try and keep beating you up. But let's face it, you lose a Lewan, a three-time Pro Bowler. That's a big deal.
No doubt. Well, listen, man, we're thrilled for you. You know, I know we exchange emails and stuff when you got the job. And
yeah, that's you guys have been great to me, both of you, and I really appreciate that, being so welcoming and so nice. And you're right. We're lucky we have a great game. But Tiki said it about the one team I didn't say it, Jim. We know our spot. We know.
Yeah, how about that? Well, Romo and Tony got downgraded in the last 30
right?
seconds.
No, we know our spot. I'm like Avis, all right? I try harder being number two.
Hey, number two is not bad. There's always a chance to eventually go to number one, but number two is a good starting spot. And Birdman, so we have him on all the time. So
he's
easy
the best,
to work
isn't
with.
He?
He's great.
He is phenomenal.
Yeah.
No question. Evan's phenomenal. I'm lucky to be on this team. I truly am.
That's awesome, man. Great to have you back on the show. Have a great call. Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Sunday, CBS. Thanks a lot, Charles. Keep doing it, man.
Be good, Charles.
Hey, thanks a lot. Best to you, too, as well. And, Tiki, I love the fact you got Derrick Henry so high in the MVP race.
Man.
He should be.
He's one of my favorite players in the NFL right now.
There you go. All right, Charles. Yep. So, that is a big game, man.
Huge.
And that's one of those revealing games, too. I want to see, but we'll have all week to dissect this. But, man, I picked Pittsburgh, not the Ravens, to win the North. You know, I picked Pittsburgh, nobody else, to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. Now, I also picked Dallas, throw that in the incinerator.
Yeah,
that has
happening.
No shot.
That's not
none.
Happening.
But I'm liking my Steelers pick. Would it surprise me if the Titans win? No, because I've got a lot of respect for them, and Vrabel is a great coach. What he does, how he manipulates some of the loopholes in the rule book, he's done it a few times now where he saves time. Anyway, we're getting a little bit off track, but going to be a lot of fun. And obviously, Tegan, I'll set that up throughout the week and get you set up for Week 7 as we coast into almost the middle part of the NFL season. Let's get the update from Bob Huser. Come back. We'll hit you with the blast. Bobby's update.
All right. Getting ready to dial up the blast on this Tuesday. Tegan and Tierney. First up, though, Game Plan for Success brought to you by Napa. And as we take a look at the A&M Aggies and their plan for success. Well, Jimbo Fisher and company made his back-to-back wins over the weekend. They took down Mississippi State. They doubled them up 28-14. And in doing so, quarterback Kellen Mond only completed 13 passes here. So they made a point to run the ball early off him. Isaiah Spiller, he was pretty active, 166 yards rushing. Along with Anaya Smith, they combined for a couple of touchdowns on the ground. So they were hammering it, and they were setting up the mode of attack, and it worked out for Jimbo and company. Whether you stop by a locally owned Napa Auto Parts store, Napa Auto Care, or visit Napa online, if you need help with your ride, you can count on Napa know-how. Napa know-how. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Again, if you guys want to hear some baseball talk, we had John Smoltz, 1995 World Series champ, Hall of Famer, and he's in the booth tonight with Joe Buck. And they'll be on Fox Game 1, 8-12-ish, 8-13, something like that, Eastern. Dodgers and the Rays, we had them on for a good lengthy segment. Hit the Kershaw stuff, hit the all the pertinent angles. If you guys want to check that out, radio.com, Apple iTunes. It was a worthy spot. You guys will enjoy it. But right now, Teek, I think it's time to blast. You ready?
Yep, let's go.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, according to NFL.com, through week six, the Steelers are the second best team in the NFL. Do we think that that's ranking the Steelers too high?
No, not at all. I mean, the Steelers are explosive offensively, as we've seen with all the talent, James Washington and Juju Smith-Schuster and now Chase Claypool. And James Conner has even stayed healthy and been effective as a running back. Vinny Snell, the backup running back, had a touchdown last week. And Big Ben's healthy. And that's all just the offense. The defense has been dominant getting after it, as Charles Davis showed us. I mean, they may be one in the NFL when it's all said and done. They are still undefeated and have won games every single way possible. So, yeah, Mike Tomlin's done a hell of a job this year.
I'm with you. I love him. And I was trying to think, you know, we weren't on TV when I said this. I'll say it for the TV audience. But this is the first time that the Steelers, and we're not talking about, you know, like a team that was just recently born like the Houston Texans or a team that's been in a football coma for a couple of decades. I mean, the Steelers are the Steelers. This is the first time they started 5-0 since 1978. When I saw that stat, I was very surprised. But now that I watch them play, I'm not surprised that they're sustaining this. The way the Packers looked against Green Bay, got to dial them down at least for against Tampa. Got to dial them back for a moment. I want to see a little bit more from Tampa on offense, but I know they're good. To me, it's three. It's really four teams. No water. Kansas City, Tennessee, Seattle, and the Steelers. If you mix them up right now, another team probably emerges. Another team probably takes a step back of those four that I mentioned, but the Steelers are absolutely terrific, but the Devin Bush injury will hurt. It will really hurt them. They lost a lot of foot speed. All right, last night Warren Moon joined the JR Sports Brief, our buddy here on CBS Sports Radio, and he gave his take on Tom Brady bouncing from New England this past offseason.
I really do think that he made the right decision. He's going somewhere where they have great talent around him, great wide receivers. But the thing I'm more encouraged about is their defense. We saw what they did the other day to Green Bay. This is a defense that can be smothering. They bring a lot of pressure. And if their defense is playing well and you've got Tom Brady who's going to be efficient, he's going to take care of the football, it's a very dangerous team going forward as they get to know each other a little bit better.
All right, that's pretty much what Tiki's been saying for a while. I've been a little more critical of the Bucs, certainly not this last game when they just destroyed the Packers, but a little bit before that. So the question is it easier to have this take after a big win? Well, I mean, it might be a little easier, but that's not to imply that it's lazy at all, because the defense, provided they remain healthy, is going to remain a constant. That's not going to be problematic. Now, you will have some intermittent issues with the offensive line and the inability for Brady to escape any pressure. He's been hit a little bit more than he's used to this year. The Bears got him a lot on that Thursday night game. They sacked him and they hit him.
Yeah.
We'll see if, you know, I know Gronk doesn't look particularly spry, but maybe this opens up a little synergy there, a little renewed synergy. It's a fair take, and it's an accurate one, and it's a timely one.
Yeah, look, their defense has been so good. Shaq Barrett hasn't even been that impactful, the sack leader last year. I mean, he's been impactful, but he hasn't been as disruptive as he was last year. But and to pick up the slack, JPP has been out of control. Jason Pierre-Paul.
It's amazing.
Looks like he's
done.
I know, right? It's like he's playing, you know, 5 years ago. So, yeah, this defense is dominant. They get after you. They're the number one, and they have been the number one rush defense in the National Football League basically for the last 2 years. Ndamukong Suh, still a beast in the middle there. This team is balanced, both sides of the football. Ronald Jones runs hard. He's effective for Tom Brady, and this is without even Leonard Fournette, who can be a game changer. He hasn't even played any dress last weekend. So they're pretty set right now.
Hey, Big Ten is back this week, which is sweet. Jim Harbaugh, Michigan, road favorites against Minnesota. Gophers coming off a really good year. I know one of their receivers is going, you know, top 15. They have one superstar receiver who's a star. But anyway, will the abbreviated season actually help Jim Harbaugh?
No, it's not going to help him at all, because if they lose a game, then they're cooked.
Boom.
They play Indiana this week?
They're playing Minnesota. They're road favorites against Minnesota, who's got a pretty good program last year or two.
Yeah.
I don't know what the number is, but Michigan, they are the favorites, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, Is it going to help? No, it's not going to help, because anyone who loses in the Big Ten or the Pac-12 when they start, I think, next week, right?
This weekend they're playing.
No, the Pac-12.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Pac-12.
I think the Pac-12 is next week. Big Ten is this week. Whoever loses, they're screwed. Yep. You know what I mean? So you're only playing 7 or 8 games, depending on which conference you're talking about. It doesn't help them with the shortened season.
I agree. Listen, there's two things at play here for Harbaugh. Number one, hey, Jim, you ever going to play for a national championship? That's what the Wolverine fans, that's what they paid you for.
That's right.
That's what they're waiting for. And you haven't gotten there yet. That's issue number one. But even secondary to that, like, if there was an early stumble, particularly against a team you're not supposed to lose to, now all of a sudden the other thing comes in play. Like, it's one thing if Michigan's not contending for a championship. That's one conversation. And that draws some ire, and it has, and rightfully so. I don't know that he's fully returned the investment. He hasn't, and I like Jim. But now if you start to get into a situation where it's not just about the lack of playoff appearances, but also like if you had like 2 or 3 losses in a condensed season, now it goes off the rails in terms of how he's perceived. And whether it's right or wrong, that would be very unbeneficial to him, for sure.
Agreed.
All right, Teak, how about this? So during a YouTube interview earlier this week, Jamal Murray, tough as nails, said that Steph Curry is the hardest player to defend in the NBA. Are we surprised? Well, I'm sure he's not talking about, like, mismatches. I mean, if you have, like, a mismatch where, when a guard is suddenly defending Jokic 15 or 16 feet away, foul line extended, he can pass like Sabonis, he can shoot. I mean, I'm going to assume that he means a basic... This is my position, and this is the guy that I'm guarding. Is Curry the hardest to defend? I mean, there's an element of the unexpected as soon as he crosses midcourt.
Yeah.
So you got to be on your toes. He's a good passer. He's got a good handle. But I still have to think a big who can shoot would be a tougher guard, personally, myself.
Yeah, but he probably doesn't have that task very often. And so if you're tasked with guarding the point guard of an opposing team and he can cross you up and he runs nonstop. That's the other thing you don't think about. When he's off the ball, he never stops moving. He's always going to try to find an open space, and you got to stick with him, especially if you're playing some sort of man.
Yep.
So, yeah, I would say yeah, especially because once he gets hot, you're not stopping him.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
So, we got to go here. I just had this conversation. So, we just cleaned the house, right? And in my office, as I look out to my left, there's a glass window, right? Usually both kids are out there. Colton's out there now, right? And I told him earlier, I said, because they always touch the glass. Use the doorknob. We just Windexed it. Use the doorknob. That's why God invented doorknobs. I look over. You know what he's doing now?
Right.
He's licking the window.
Of course.
What the hell are you doing? I've never seen that before.
He's not touching the doorknob, though.
That's true.
He's not touching the glass.
Yeah,
I mean.
Exactly. All right, Teak. I've got the Dodgers tonight. I've got the Dodgers in a relatively short series, and I've got Kershaw dealing tonight. How about you?
I'm going to say Tyler Glasnow is going to find a way, and they're bullpen their way to victory. Going Rays.
Okay, I like it.
It's Tampa's year.
Safe, sensible, sane. Be well. See ya.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.